1. Flynn Patrick O'Flynn was an ivory poacher by profession, and modestly he admitted that he was the best on the east coast of Africa. Rashid El Keb was an exporter of precious stones, of women for the harems and great houses of Arabia and India, and of illicit ivory. This he admitted only to his trusted clients. To the rest, he was a rich and respectable owner of coastal shipping. In an afternoon, during the monsoon of 1912, drawn together by their mutual interest in pachyderms, Flynn and Rashid sat in the back room of El Keb's shop in the Arab quarter of Zanzibar and drank tea from tiny brass thimbles. The hot tea made Flynn O'Flynn perspire even more than usual. It was so humid hot in the room that the flies sat in languid stupor upon the low ceiling. "Listen, Kebby, you lend me just one of those stinking little ships of yours, and I'll fill her so high with tusks she'll damn nigh sink." "Ah," replied El Keb carefully, and went on waving the palm leaf fan in his own face, a face that resembled that of a suspicious parrot with a straggly goatee beard. "Have I ever let you down yet?" Flynn demanded aggressively, and a drop of sweat fell from the tip of his nose onto his already damp shirt. "Ah," El Keb repeated, "this scheme has a flair. It has a touch of greatness to it. This scheme..." Flynn paused to find a suitable adjective. "This scheme is Napoleonic. It is Caesarian." "Ah," El Keb said again, and refilled his teacup. Lifting it delicately between thumb and forefinger, he sipped before speaking. "Is it necessary only that I should risk the total destruction of a 60-foot dhow worth," prudently he inflated the figure, £2,000? "Against an almost certain recovery of 20,000, Flynn cut in quickly, and El Keb smiled a little, almost dreamily. "You'd put the profits so high?" he asked. "That's the lowest figure. Good God, Kebby! There hasn't been a shot fired in the Rufiji Basin for 20 years. You know damn well it's the Kaiser's private hunting reserve. The Jumbo are so thick in there, I could round them up and drive them in like sheep." Involuntarily, Flynn's right forefinger crooked and twitched, as though it were already curling around a trigger. "Madness," whispered El Keb, with the gold gloat softening the shape of his lips. "You'd sail into the Rufiji River from the sea, hoist the Union Jack on one of the islands in the delta, and fill the dhow with German ivory. Madness. The Germans have formally annexed none of those islands. I'd be in and out before Berlin had sent their first cable to London. With 10 of my gun boys hunting, we'd fill the dhow in 2 weeks." "The Germans would have a gunboat there in a week. They've got the Blucher lying at Dar es Salaam under steam, heavy cruiser with 9-inch guns. We'd be under the protection of the British flag. They couldn't dare touch us, not on the high seas. Not with things the way they are now between England and Germany." "Mr. O'Flynn, I was led to believe you were a citizen of the United States of America." "You're damn right I am." Flynn sat up a little straighter, a little more proudly. "You'd need a British captain for the dhow." El Keb mused and stroked his beard thoughtfully. "Jesus, Kebby, you didn't think I was fool enough to sail that cow in myself." Flynn looked pained. "I'll find someone else to do that, and to sail around again through the Imperial German Navy. Me, I'm going to walk in from my base camp in Portuguese Mozambique and go out the same way. Forgive me, El-Keb smiled again. I underestimated you. He stood up quickly. The splendor of the great jewel dagger at his waist was somewhat spoiled by the unwashed white of his ankle-length robe. Mr. O'Flynn, I think I have just the man to captain your dhow for you. But first, it is necessary to alter his financial circumstances so that he might be willing to accept employment.